This episode of the Ortho Bullets podcast will be a question session reviewing multiple choice questions related to ligaments of the knee and THA prosthesis design, which are two topics that we covered this past week on the podcast. So let's get right into it. We'll start with ligaments of the knee. First question, which of the following neurovascular structures is closest to the posterior capsule of the knee? And the choices are 1. Popliteal vein, 2. Popliteal artery, 3. Tibial nerve, 4. Common peroneal nerve, and 5. The sural nerve. So the order from superficial to deep, as well as from lateral to medial, is tibial nerve, popliteal vein, and popliteal artery. The sural nerve is subcutaneous in the posterior calf, and the peroneal nerve is posterolateral. So the correct answer to this question is 2, popliteal artery. Next question. In assessing the knee after acute injury, increased tibial external rotation at 30 degrees of knee flexion indicates injury to what structure? And the choices are 1, medial collateral ligament, 2, anterior cruciate ligament, 3, posterior cruciate ligament, 4, posterolateral corner, and 5, posteromedial capsule. So increased external rotation at 30 degrees indicates injury to the posterolateral corner of the knee. Increased external rotation at both 30 degrees and 90 degrees indicates injury to both the posterolateral corner and the posterior cruciate ligament. So the correct answer to this question is 4, posterolateral corner. Next question. The function of which of the following structures is to resist internal tibial rotation with the knee in full extension? And the choices are 1, anterior cruciate ligament, 2, iliotibial band, 3, popliteus tendon, 4, popliteofibular ligament, and 5, posterior oblique ligament. So the primary function of the posterior oblique ligament is to resist internal tibial rotation with the knee in full extension. To review, the posterior oblique ligament is a structure within the posteromedial corner of the knee with attachments proximally to the adductor tubercle of the femur and distally to the tibia/posterior knee capsule. The posterior oblique ligament and posteromedial capsule play a significant role in the prevention of additional posterior tibial translation in the knee in the setting of posterior cruciate ligament injury. They also act to resist internal tibial rotation with the knee in full extension. Griffith et al. Reports that the posterior oblique ligament provides significant resistance to valgus and internal rotation forces with the knee in extension. They used a cadaver model and demonstrated that the superficial MCL resists valgus and external rotation forces more than the posterior oblique ligament, while the posterior oblique ligament is more involved in resisting internal rotation. Tibor et al. Reviews the anatomy of the posteromedial corner of the knee. They report that failing to recognize injury to these structures may cause failure of cruciate ligament reconstruction surgery, and that reconstruction or repair of the posteromedial corner may be indicated in the face of multiple ligament injuries. So anyway, the correct answer to this question obviously is 5, posterior oblique ligament. Next question. A 28-year-old football player sustains a contact knee injury while being tackled. On physical exam, he has a 1A Lachman and a normal McMurray test. His posterior drawer, dial, and varus stress tests are normal. He has pain and 5 millimeters of opening on valgus stress at 30 degrees of flexion. Which statement is true regarding the injured structure? And the choices are 1, resides between layers 1 and 2 on the medial side of the knee, 2, inserts onto Gerty's tubercle, 3, originates slightly posterior and proximal to the medial epicondyle, 4, courses intraarticularly through the hiatus of the lateral meniscus, and 5, has an attachment between the adductor tubercle and the medial epicondyle at Schottel's point. So the clinical presentation is consistent with an injury to the superficial MCL of the knee, which originates slightly posterior and proximal to the medial epicondyle. So the correct answer to this question is 3, originates slightly posterior and proximal to the medial epicondyle. So to review, the superficial portion of the MCL is the primary stabilizer to valgus stress at all angles, contributing 57% and 78% of medial stability at 5 degrees and 25 degrees of knee flexion, respectively. Anatomic studies have shown that the superficial MCL originates approximately 3.2 millimeters proximal and 4.8 millimeters posterior from the medial femoral epicondyle and inserts into the periosteum of the proximal tibia, that is deep to the pes anserinus. The superficial MCL lies in layer 2, just deep to gracilis and semitendinosus tendons. Wijcik et al. Looked at radiographic identification of the primary medial knee structures, including the superficial MCL. On the lateral radiograph, they found that the attachment of the superficial MCL was an average of 6.0 millimeters from the medial epicondyle. Wijcik also reviewed injuries to the MCL and associated medial structures of the knee. They state that physical examination is the initial method of choice for diagnosis of medial knee injuries through the application of a valgus load, both at full knee extension and between 20 degrees and 30 degrees of knee flexion. Treatment of isolated grade 3 injuries to the MCL or such injuries combined with an anterior cruciate ligament tear should start with non-operative treatments of the MCL due to high rates of success with non-operative treatment. If operative treatment is required, an anatomic repair or reconstruction is recommended. Next question. Isolated transection of the posterolateral or PL bundle of the ACL has what effect on anterior tibial translation and rotatory stability of the knee? And the choices are 1. Increased tibial translation and rotation at 30 degrees of flexion. 2. Increased tibial translation and rotation at 90 degrees of flexion. 3. Increased tibial translation at 30 degrees of flexion and increased rotation at 90 degrees of flexion. 4. Increased tibial translation at 90 degrees and negligible effect on rotatory stability. And 5. Increased tibial translation at 30 degrees and negligible effect on rotatory stability. So isolated transection of the posterolateral bundle of the ACL leads to increased tibial translation and rotation at 30 degrees of flexion. So the answer is 1. Increased tibial translation and rotation at 30 degrees of flexion. Zantop and Herbert et al. Determined the influence of isolated deficiency of the AM or PL bundle of the ACL on the resulting knee kinematics. They found that transection of the anterior medial bundle leads to increased anterior tibial translation at 90 degrees of knee flexion, whereas transection of the posterolateral bundle shows an increased anterior tibial translation as well as a combined rotatory instability at 30 degrees. This rotatory stability provided by the PL bundle prevents the pivot shift phenomenon found in ACL-deficient knees. Zantop and Wellman et al. Performed a cadaveric study to determine the distances from the tibial and femoral center of the native AM and PL bundle to the articular cartilage and meniscus. They concluded that the center of the femoral PL bundle is shallow and inferior to the AM bundle, and on the tibia, the AM bundle lies anterior when compared with the typical single bundle ACL tunnel. Moving on to the next topic of THA prosthesis design, the first question is which of the following is a benefit of using a ceramic on ceramic bearing surface compared to a metal on highly cross-linked polyethylene bearing surface during a total hip arthroplasty? And the choices are 1. Increased jump distance, 2. Lower volumetric wear, 3. Decreased cost, 4. Lower rate of stripe wear, and 5. Improved range of motion. So ceramic on ceramic bearing surfaces have the lowest volumetric wear when compared to all other combinations of bearing surfaces. So the correct answer to this question is 2. Lower volumetric wear. Ceramic bearing surfaces, like other bearing surfaces, have their advantages and disadvantages. The biggest advantage of ceramic on ceramic bearing surfaces is that they have the best wear properties of all bearing surfaces due to their low coefficient of friction. Additional advantages include inert wear particles and high biocompatibility. Disadvantages of ceramic bearing surfaces include stripe wear, squeaking, the possibility of catastrophic fracture, and relatively high cost. Guarino et al. Reviewed 333 total hip replacements treated with ceramic on ceramic bearing surfaces. At 3 years, there were 4 ceramic-related complications, including 3 chipped liners and 1 eccentric seating of the cup liner. no patients sustained a gross fracture of the ceramic components. So to quickly review the incorrect answers, answer one is incorrect because the jump distance is the amount of translation prior to dislocation. This is related to the size of the femoral head and not on the bearing surface. Answer three is incorrect because the ceramic bearing surfaces are more expensive than metal on polyethylene surfaces. Answer four is incorrect because stripe wear is a characteristic unique to ceramic on ceramic bearings. It is thought to be caused by edge loading. And answer five is incorrect because the range of motion is related to the size of the head that is used and not the bearing surface. Next question. In a well-positioned metal on polyethylene total hip replacement, increased wear and corrosion at the taper interface is associated with which of the following complications? And the choices are 1. Accelerated polyethylene wear, 2. Dislocation, 3. Pseudotumor, 4. Squeaking, and 5. Septic arthritis. So increased wear and corrosion at the taper interface results in debris and metal ions. This is associated with pseudotumor formation, so the correct answer to this question is 3. Pseudotumor. But to review, a pseudotumor is a type of adverse local tissue reaction that has become associated with metal-on-metal joint failures. Adverse local tissue reactions are thought to occur due to the body's response to metal ions, wear debris, and corrosive products, which are produced when there is motion between the two contacting metal surfaces. Therefore, the taper interface also provides a setting where this process can occur. Fretting and corrosion damage to the taper interface have been linked to pseudotumor formation and aseptic loosening for both metal-on-metal and metal-on-polyethylene joints. Cook et al. Described two cases with large-diameter metal-on-polyethylene total hip replacements that developed pseudotumors requiring revision surgery. Examination of the retrieved implants revealed a discrete pattern of material loss from the distal end of the head taper slash stem trunnion interface. The authors postulated that the taper design did not provide a sufficient locking mechanism, allowing the head to toggle on the trunnion. This led to an accelerated pattern of wear. Next question. Which of the following has been associated with an increased likelihood of stress shielding after cementless total hip arthroplasty? And the choices are 1. Use of titanium alloy femoral components, 2. Use of proximally fixed femoral components, 3. Use of distally fixed femoral components, 4. Use of press-fit stems in patients with narrow intramedullary canals, and 5. Use of plasma-sprayed components. So, although stress shielding has not been associated with adverse clinical outcomes to date, it is a commonly observed process after cementless total hip arthroplasty. Factors that increase the magnitude of stress shielding include the use of distally fixed cobalt chrome stems, particularly in patients with osteoporosis. Large diameter femoral components, that is larger than 18 millimeters in diameter, have also been associated with an increased prevalence of stress shielding. But the answer to this question is going to be 3, use of distally fixed femoral components. Next question. A patient with a severe nickel allergy and degenerative joint disease of the hip would be best served by which of the following prosthetic options? And the choices are 1, cemented titanium stem, ceramic alumina head, and press-fit titanium cup. 2, cemented cobalt chrome stem, ceramic alumina head, and press-fit cobalt chrome cup. 3, press-fit titanium stem, cobalt chrome head, and press-fit titanium cup. 4, press-fit titanium stem, titanium head, and press-fit titanium cup. And 5, press-fit titanium stem, ceramic alumina head, and cementless titanium cup. So nickel is present in cobalt chrome and stainless steel alloys used in orthopedic surgery. Therefore, these materials are not well suited for nickel-sensitive patients. Nickel is not present in titanium alloys or in ceramic components. Titanium is therefore the material of choice for the femoral and acetabular components. Titanium is a poor option for the femoral head due to its susceptibility to abrasive wear. Titanium is also poorly suited to cemented applications in hip arthroplasty because it is less stiff than cobalt chrome and stainless steel and therefore transmits greater stresses to the cement column. Titanium's poor abrasion resistance can also leave the components susceptible to increased abrasive wear in the event of loosening and micromotion. Therefore, of the options available, a cementless titanium stem and socket with a ceramic head is the best choice. In nickel-sensitive total knee arthroplasty patients, cemented oxidized zirconium femoral components can be used in place of cobalt chrome, and titanium tibial components, press fit or cemented, have been used with success. So the answer to this question is 5, press fit titanium stem, ceramic alumina head, and cementless titanium cup. Next question. Compared to metal on polyethylene total hip bearing surfaces, the debris particles generated by metal on metal articulations are, and the options are 1, larger and less numerous, 2, larger and more numerous, 3, smaller and less numerous, 4, smaller and more numerous, and 5, not detectable. So retrieval studies have shown that the debris particles produced by metal-on-metal articulations in total hip arthroplasty are several orders of magnitude smaller and may be up to 100 times more numerous than those found with metal-on-polyethylene articulations. So the correct answer to this question is 4, smaller and more numerous. Next question. With the increasing availability of total hip arthroplasty to younger patients with hip osteoarthritis, there has been increased use of alternative bearing surfaces. Compared to a ceramic-on-ceramic articulation, which of the following is a specific advantage of a metal-on-metal bearing surface? And the choices are 1, increased wettability, 2, increased hardness, 3, increased fracture toughness, 4, decreased surface roughness, and 5, lower coefficient of friction. So alternative bearing surfaces in total hip arthroplasty have received a lot of attention in recent years as more and more hip arthroplasties are being performed on younger and younger patients with hip arthritis. The two most popular non-metal on polyethylene bearing surfaces are metal on metal and ceramic on ceramic. There are arguments supporting the use of either, but ceramic bearings have been shown to have a theoretic increased risk of fracture compared with cobalt chromium. This has been shown to be clinically relevant with zirconium ceramics. However, newer alumina ceramics are being produced with lower porosity and grain size and with higher density and purity, resulting in lower fracture risk, but still greater than that of cobalt chromium. So the correct answer to this question is going to be 3, increased fracture toughness. Next question. A 72-year-old man with a history of Parkinson's disease, stable coronary artery disease, and mild renal insufficiency is seen for hip arthroplasty. Which of the following is considered the most appropriate bearing of choice? And the choices are 1, ceramic on ceramic, 2, large diameter metal head on highly cross-linked polyethylene liner, 3, ceramic head on metal liner, 4, large diameter metal-on-metal total hip arthroplasty, and 5, metal-on-conventional polyethylene liner that is non-cross-linked. So the most appropriate bearing of those listed would be a large diameter metal head on cross-linked polyethylene. Because of the renal insufficiency in this patient, metal-on-metal should be avoided because metal ions are renally excreted. Ceramic-on-ceramic implants are not necessary in this patient because of the patient's limited activity and life expectancy, as well as the downside of increased cost, the small but definite risk of ceramic fracture, and the increased technical demands of inserting ceramic implants. A highly cross-linked liner is favored to allow for maximum head size, as the patient may be at increased risk of dislocation because of his neurological disorder. So again, the correct answer to this question is going to be 2, large diameter metal head on highly cross-linked polyethylene liner. Next question. Which of the following abnormalities has been observed in a higher than expected frequency in patients with metal on metal hip bearings? 1, renal cell carcinoma. 2, leukocyte chromosomal aberrations. 3, carcinomas of the gastrointestinal tract. 4, soft tissue sarcomas. And 5, thyroid carcinoma. So metal-on-metal hip bearings have been associated with very low rates of wear and are commonly used in North America and Europe. Patients with these bearings have higher levels of metal ions, particularly cobalt and chromium, in the bloodstream than patients with bearings made of other materials. Although many researchers have been concerned that these ions may predispose to cancer, there has been no evidence that patients with metal-on-metal bearings are developing sarcomas or carcinomas with higher frequency than the general population. However, there has been mixed data as to whether hematopoietic malignancies are slightly more prevalent in patients with metal-on-metal bearings. Two recent reports have found chromosomal abnormalities, such as translocations and aneuploidy, to be increased in patients with metal-on-metal hip bearings. The clinical consequences of these changes, if any, remain unknown. So the correct answer to this question is 2, leukocyte chromosomal aberrations. And the final question, a 56-year-old male undergoes revision of his right hip arthroplasty for acute pain and radiographs suggestive of ceramic femoral head fracture. At the time of the revision, multiple fragments of the ceramic femoral head were seen in the joint and soft tissues. The components were noted to be in good position. He was copiously irrigated and the ceramic head was exchanged with the metallic femoral head. 12 months later, the patient presents with insidious onset of right groin pain. Radiographs show no gross abnormalities without signs of loosening. Which of the following is the most likely cause of the patient's pain? And the choices are 1, periprosthetic infection, 2, massive third body wear, 3, pseudotumor formation, 4, soft tissue metallosis, and 5, iliopsoas tendonitis. So the most likely cause of the patient's pain is massive third body wear caused by retained ceramic fragments. Ceramic femoral head fractures create many fragments that are difficult to extract at the time of revision surgery. During the revision surgery, it is imperative to remove all fragments that can be visualized. Despite a thorough debridement, microscopic fragments will still remain, and these particles may cause pain through the creation of an inflammatory response in the tissues. Exchange of the femoral head should be performed with another ceramic head as opposed to a metal head. If a metal head is used, abrasive wear will ensue as the microscopic fragments will scratch the femoral head due to differences in hardness. Traina et al. Described their experiences with revision of ceramic components. Most commonly, fractures of ceramic components occur as a result of trauma, dislocation, or errors in operative technique. These include head-neck taper mismatch, impacting the ceramic head with too much force, debris, and intraoperative damage to the metal neck taper. So again, the correct answer to this question is 2, massive third body wear. That's all for this question review session about ligaments of the knee and THA prosthesis design. Hopefully that was helpful and you like this new format of the question session. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.